Parents strongly caution, the following programs are intended for mature audiences over the age of 18. These programs may contain some material that many parents would not find suitable for children and may include intense violence, sexual situations, coarse language, and suggestive dialogue.
Happy Tuesday. Welcome back to another episode of Sound Injection. We've got some of the guys from Anti-Rope all the way from Germany. Oh, you can't hear us? Oh, no. Can you hear us, Flavin?
I can hear everything. Everything's fine.
Okay, so he's good.
can
you guys hear me? Nope, they can't hear me.
What about you? Can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear both of you.
Yeah, I can hear both of you guys.
Okay, perfect. Slavin, can you hear both of us up here?
Yes.
All right, perfect. All right, you might want to tell Patrick to bounce out and bounce back in. That'll
just
probably help.
The intro, but no, I hear nothing.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm gonna just a moment.
Yeah, that works.
All right, so while we're waiting, don't forget to go check out our Spotify playlist.
So, it I just told him he needs to
come in again.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. All right. Perfect. So while we got you, we'll go ahead and start. So at what age did you decide that you wanted to be a musician? And most importantly, what band kind of roped you into doing that?
That's a tough one. I was 8 or 9, I was born in the '80s, I got my first cassette recorder, you know, the small ones, right. where I could record stuff, and in those days MTV was a big thing, and in age 8 or 9 I was catching up and listening to it might sound weird, but it was Pet Shop Boys and Duran. That was the
you
first,
didn't tell me first. About Pet Shop Boys.
And at age, I think it was when I was 10 or 11, I walked in a room where my brother was listening to his Walkman, and for the whole day or something, and asked him what he was listening to. He just showed me. It was, I remember the chorus of One from Metallica.
Okay.
That was a crucial moment for me. And from this point on, I was fixed. So...
Yeah. See, I had something similar because I'm probably around the same age as you, and For me, it was hearing Motorhead, Ace of Spades on MTV, and I was just like, oh my God, what is this? Because growing up, I grew up in out in the Midwest, out in Oklahoma, and it was nothing but country music or pop music, and that was it until the day I discovered MTV. And then that changed everything. I was like, yeah, screw this other crap. This is what I want to listen to. So, Patrick, the question I asked him, the same for you, is at what age did you decide you want to be a musician, and what band really pulled you into wanting to do that?
I was 7 years old, and an older guy said, oh, Kiss is going to be on TV right now. And I didn't know what Kiss is, so I went with him in his house, and then I saw fire spitting, blood spitting, Ace Frehley with this burning guitar. And this was the moment where I was sure, wow, this is my life. This is what I want to do. So I was a huge Kiss fan. And I started my first band when I was 8 years old, and I recorded my first demo when I was 8 or 9 years old. I still have the demo tape. This was on a 4-track recorder with the microphones and everything. So this was my first recording. And we didn't know how to play, but we didn't care because we made this what today is called detune. We just detune, and then with one finger you had a power chord. So it was great. And this is how we made the first band. And I still have this guitar.
Oh, my shit. First electric guitar. That's awesome.
It was a Flying V, and still it sounds excellent. I think it's even one of still my best guitars. It wasn't a real one. I had no money. I was 8 years old, so my grandmother gave me 100 marks. What was 100 marks? It was $50. I think.
Yes.
In the days. And then I bought a secondhand Flying V, but it's a Japanese one. It's great. It's really awesome. Mm. Then of course, then I heard in the radio Iron Maiden and Mötley Crüe. And then I bought my first Metallica record. It was Master of Puppets in 86. And 86 was really a crazy year with the, everything was great. Megadeth, Peace Cells, Anthrax, Among the Living, and even Guns N' Roses, Appetite for Destruction. So I was a young kid. I didn't have so much money to buy all these records. So there was more excellent records coming out than money. But I think this was the best year of metal. And then, when I went older, I heard Neurosis and this kind of sound. But Kiss was the moment where I really, this was my life,
Right.
Oh yeah. That's awesome. All right, CB, you're up on deck, bro.
All right. So what is your guys' greatest fan interaction so far?
Oh, sorry. I can.
You can't hear us. You can't hear me. I don't think he can hear me.
Can y'all hear him?
No.
Nope.
Nope. Right. Okay. So
unfortunately,
I can.
CB asked, "What is your greatest fan interaction at a live show?"
My fan interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick. Yeah, you have a lot of good stories.
But fan interaction—that's a difficult. The most beautiful fan interaction back in the days was with women, I think. So, let's say the best fan interaction was when we were playing in Turkey in front of 40,000 people. This was crazy. So you hear 40,000 people singing your song, you get goosebumps everywhere and you feel like Superman,
Right.
The master of the universe, you're on stage and everybody's shouting. So this was maybe the best fan interaction. And
okay, fair enough. How about you, Flavin? Same thing.
I'll be right back.
No. The band Patrick was playing in Turkey was another band. So it was used before.
Oh, no, I don't hear anybody.
Uh-oh.
I come back.
Go ahead, Slaven.
Just buzzing. Yeah, I really don't have a particular fan situation that I can remember. Not because with my bands and as my older bands, we weren't huge. We were small bands playing small shows. So it was just having fun and doing the things we liked and getting drunk.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. I definitely dig it. I definitely dig it. So if you guys could go on tour with any three bands of your choice, they can't say no, who would you decide to take on a tour with you?
Oh, for me, it would be New Roses. I played a lot of shows with the New Roses in my old band in the 90s. So these were amazing shows. I love their music. I especially love their intense live shows. So this would be my number one. And then maybe, yeah, Kiss, but they stopped.
Yeah. unfortunately.
But I still love Kiss. So the 70s albums are great, I think. And then number three is Slayer, but they stopped too. So
until they're back.
Is that?
They're back.
Yeah, but it's not Slayer. Well, Jeff Hanneman. Slayer was dead for me when Dave Lombardo left the band. The other drummer has no groove. Dave Lombardo was the first metal drummer that had an excellent groove, and okay. I think he didn't know about it. He didn't make it on purpose. I think it's part of his playing.
Okay, fair enough. How about you, Slaven?
I don't know. I'm thinking about the 90s. I would really like to play with 1992, 1993 Alice in Chains, maybe.
Okay.
And also joining Soundgarden in those days.
Yeah.
And New Roses, of course, because New Roses, for me, I found them pretty late. I think it was end of the 90s, early 2000s. And the sound they make, it's otherworldly. I think it's a different kind of music and different kind of vibe. I don't know. It's a really great band. So these are my three.
I got the rare opportunity to get to see Soundgarden live at a big festival here. And unfortunately, it was literally 2 weeks before Chris Cornell passed away.
Oh, okay.
And I
saw them too. I think it's support of Black Sabbath.
Aussie store in Munich, yeah.
Oh, yeah, in Munich. But they had a bad day this day.
Oh, they were amazing at this festival. And I was so glad to have got to see it before he had passed away, because I would have been really sad. Because I kind of feel the same way about Linkin Park. I always wanted to see Linkin Park with Chester, and I never got the chance to. And I was like, oh, man, this just sucks. All right, CB, you're up on deck, bro.
All right. Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Always. You can hear me. Okay.
Yeah. Slaven can't.
No. Okay.
So maybe Slaven, you have to come get out.
We're going to be once in a while. Oh.
See you guys in the same place. Okay.
Let's see if it works out.
Go ahead, CB.
Okay.
All right. So with you being, experienced in the music industry, what is something that you wish that you would have learned that you know now, learn back before you learned it?
That perfection is killing any emotion in music. So when you're young, you're trying. I was playing in a thrash metal band, and you were always trying to get it as accurate as possible. And you took too much time in the studio to make it better and better and better. And I think as soon as it's perfect, it's really shit. So I learned this as a producer, because my job was a music producer, and I think it took some time to learn it. I think it was in the beginning of the 2000s that I accepted that perfection is really shit. And this is one reason why I just want to record Anti-Rope albums live. Both of our records are recorded live. And of course, there is imperfection, of course, but this is what music is all about. Is it needs like highlights and lowlights, and this is life. So, right. And even the production, I think, of the Anti-Rope albums are more like in the 90s, not this very like plug-in guitar amps. This is the reason why I like the music of the 70s, 80s, and 90s, because they had tape, the bands had to go in a studio. They had to be able to play their songs. There was a tape running. In my first studio, we recorded everything on tape. Nowadays, with a hard drive, hard disk recording, and bands are looping parts, and maybe it sounds great, maybe it's very tight, but it doesn't give me anything. So this is maybe the reason why I'm listening to mainly to old school bands. From the of course, there's new bands, that, metal bands that I like, but it's a few only. I like Gojira. I like, the French bands. I like the, how are they called? Igor. You know Igor, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Igor is excellent. And Neurosis is, again, such a band you can hear that all their records are recorded live. And this is why it's so intense. and these perfect productions, it's not intense at all. And I wish I would have learned this, like, way earlier. I would have made better records back in the days.
Okay. You want to see if Slavin can hear you, Stevie?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, I can hear you. Cool.
Oh, okay, yeah. Great.
Now I can't hear a Slavin.
Oh.
Shit. Is there no way to unmute him? So I have to go out and in again?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. I know this game.
Go ahead, Stevie.
All right, so the question I asked was, you know, you guys have quite a bit of experience in the music industry. What's something that you wish that you would have known now that you'd known back before you knew it?
No, it's, you know, speaking in generally about music industry, I mean, it's I don't know how to say, it's quite complicated, the whole thing, you know, nowadays with bands engaging in social media, and you just, I think I miss times where you were just as a band just was able to make music and make great songs and great records. So this was kind of the place I was coming from, you know, back in the 90s. You had if you played good and have good songs, then you had a chance. Nowadays, I read somewhere, I saw an interview with a guy, or it was TikTok, or I don't know, and he said he's someone in the music industry, and he says nowadays, I think he said only 20% of music you make is really important. 80% is how you promote your band, are you on the social media, are you active on the social media and stuff. So this is kind of thing that makes me a bit sad, because we musicians, it's a hard work also. So you need to give your output, give everything you have, you know, physically, mentally, to write something, to make it your own. And then it's kind of just a 20% of everything else is kind of how do you want to present yourself to the other people. I already did with a song, you know, so
right.
So that's kind of a thing that annoys me and makes me really sad. Yeah, but it is what it is, and the train is, you know, the balls are rolling. You cannot change it. So you
but
need
I have to
go
say,
with the flow, or you know.
It wasn't so much better before.
Maybe things gonna change, but I don't think so. It's we kind of locked in the loop of, you know, constant social media overflowing our brains, you know.
Right. What were you gonna say, Patrick?
I think Slavin can't hear me, right?
No, I don't think Slavin can hear you. No. Okay, go ahead, Patrick.
No, I think it wasn't better before, because before the labels
restart,
the labels were like deciding if somebody's going to hear your music or not. So of course you had the live shows, but the labels were way more mighty than today. Today there's bands, they have a talent with social media. There's, how is she called? A very, one of the biggest American singer. How is she called? I don't know right now, but she one of the number one acts, but she's very into all the social media stuff. So it gives you a chance too.
Right.
But you have to like it. Oh, Anti-Rope is not the kind of band like making everyday social media content, like making pictures of films while they're eating. That's no.
Okay. So for each one of you, before you're going to write, everybody has kind of these music or bands they listen to before they write to get inspiration or whatever. Are you guys the type that you actually like to listen to bands within the same genre, or do you like to listen to something completely away from what you do as far as what type of genre of music that you play?
I think everybody in the band has other favorite bands. So like my sister's playing bass and she's more into disco music. So she doesn't listen to metal music, but she loves playing in a metal band. So the music we're listening and the music we're making, I think it's an influence. Of course, the music you're listening is a part of you, but it's not, we never try to sound like our heroes. Slaven is more like, he grew up with the grunge stuff in the 90s. I grew up with the thrash metal stuff in the 80s. So we just write songs. And since Julie came in the band, we have changed a little bit the style of our music, but it was random because I wanted to show her a song, and I slowed it down a lot because it's more easy to show someone a riff when it's slow. And then we were all like, oh, it sounds great when it's slow. So this was the song Beautiful Liar now, and we recorded it like a doom song. So the original was like twice as fast and we slowed it down. And I think in this moment, we recognized that we love this slow, intense, depressive feeling, but it wasn't calculated or it hasn't much to do with the music we're listening to. Of course, we all like, or Slaven and me, we like Type O Negative. But I don't think we sound like Type O Negative or try to sound like, but we like this doom emotion. I think it has a, with Anti-Rope, this is, I've played in many bands in my life and some bands, of course, you try to get like famous or something. So you really think about how your music sounds, and Anti-Rope is something different. It was like Slaven and me, we said we want to make music and we don't care what it is. So maybe so even if I will come up with a thrash metal song and Slaven says, yeah, I love it, so we're going to do it. So we don't think about it. We just do it.
Okay, fair enough. How about you, Slaven?
A lot of the stuff I'm listening to is not always, I mean, I like Seattle Scene, Chains and Soundgarden and New Roses. And I also like the old Metallica and like Sepultura and stuff like that. But also, I also love David Bowie or Depeche Mode or The Cure, you know, for example, The Great, I love this band. I don't know if you guys know the band, it's Morphine.
Yep, I know who they are.
Yeah, it's. I mean, this is I love this band. Those three guys and you know, the drums, bass, and saxophone. I mean, it has nothing to do with you know, the heavy metal or rock or doom, but it's kind of, and when I'm writing something, it's, I think it's somewhere in subconscious. It's not a, there is no recipe or I never thought I need to write a song, and it needs to be like the song I love or something I heard. So it's just kind of, I'm playing the riff and I'm singing the melody, or I'm singing the ghost notes, you know, ghost text, and that's the I think all of those things combined, there is a kind of influence, but it's not obvious, I think. Yeah, and as also as Patrick said, it's kind of we told ourselves, let's make something we like. And if you're going to do a, I don't know, 3-minute solo on it, just do it if it sounds great. So, that's the way we see it. Yeah.
So we never think about if people's going to like it or not. I wouldn't say we don't care. Of course, you're happy when people says they like your record, of course, but this is not our target. I can see that when I don't make music, I get grumpy, or I need it. So I think the best for us is to make the music we like, and then it's more authentic. So it's I think listeners can hear if it's authentic or not.
And I also think it's I think people recognize something if you're doing something you really love, and you don't care much if, I don't know, if it sounds like this and that. People can recognize it, people can hear it. And I think if you really try so hard to make something just to fit somewhere, and you know, and to be in a trendy, to be trendy, or to be just like sound to bands like the bands you hear today, I don't know, if then it's kind of fake, you know. So and I'm really, I'm when I don't know how to say it, the fake stuff is kind of, I'm just, so no, it needs to be real. So it's also when there's something, for example, and melody I'm singing or something, and in the moment I realize, oh, it doesn't sound like me, it's, that's it, it's over, I cannot sing it anymore. So it needs to be real. Yeah,
Slaven is a singer that needs to feel the song, and when he feels the song, you can hear it, because we have played in so this is how we met in another band, and the guy who built up the band, he wanted him to sing songs from the old singer, and Slaven didn't feel it. And so I think it's very important that the music fits to the singer, and you have to feel it. So if we see in the rehearsal very quickly if something fits or not. And if it doesn't fit, we just change it, or we make something different.
See, I totally understand with you with that, because, you know, the band that I'm in right now, when we first started, we had a male vocalist, and then we ended up losing him, and a female came in, and we realized real quick that her vocals and what she was doing, it did not fit. It didn't match. So we ended up scratching 17 songs and threw them out and redid everything all over to fit her. And you can tell, because if it don't fit, you can tell right off the bat it doesn't fit. And people are going to hear that. They're going to know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You know, they're going to know. It's just like whenever I seen Linkin Park last year with the new female singer, and she was singing songs that Chester did. You could tell, you could clearly tell on stage that she was uncomfortable, and she did not like doing those songs, which I don't blame her, because they weren't her songs. She didn't do them. She didn't help write them. She wasn't a part of the process. And to go up there and be singing somebody else's legacy, I can't even imagine how she fucking felt, because I would be terrified. Absolutely terrified.
Yeah.
All right, Stevie.
Being a singer is like is something, I don't know how to say in English. Wie sagt man intim in English?
Personal. It's very personal.
Yeah, thing, it's something very personal, yeah. It's a part of you, and of course, if you're a cover singer, it's no problem. But then there's something missing. If you're a cover singer, you can sing everything, but you don't have. It's not you.
Right. All right, CB.
All right. So tell us your wildest travel story to a venue.
Oh, I know. I know so many wild travel stories.
Give us a good one.
A good one. Oh, it's so difficult to explain in English. We were on a highway. The band was sleeping. And the female singer of my old band was driving. And suddenly, she did something very strange. So the whole truck, not truck, it's a Sprinter, what is it? It's not a car, but something, a big
trailer.
Like a van.
Like a van, yeah. This is,
yeah.
The van started to make like this, and suddenly it jumped on the thing between the two highways.
Oh, the median.
Median.
Yeah, And we were like surfing on this one, but we were driving like 160 kilometers per hour. And in Germany, there's no limit on the highway. So we were very fast. We were flying on this. And the band woke up and was like, "What the fuck are you doing here?" Like, I want to sleep. And this was like, and everybody saw that, and all cars stopped. So we were flying away the highway and stopping, and nobody was hurt. But the car was totally damaged. So our equipment still was damaged. You remember, Slaven, the case was damaged. So these things from the highway between, they went into the bottom of the car, into our
Oh
equipment.
my gosh.
And then we had to organize another car. And we were late then to the show, and we came very late, so the people were waiting. So we took the equipment that still worked, put it on stage, and played the show straight on
Wow.
without any sound check, without any moment where we could sit down because we were late. And this was
Oh.
crazy. Nobody got hurt, but it was like 160 kilometer per hours on the highway. And I was the only one who was awake, and I was sure, okay, we're dying now. Because you saw the cars from the other, like driving like 100 or 200 kilometers an hour, and you're like, it was crazy. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And playing a show right after this was really like, it was crazy. Yeah.
Well,
I would have
you're
shit my pants.
awake now. Yeah, it was really, really crazy.
Absolutely not. All right, Slavin, what, how about you?
Well, I think I was 17, 16, 17. Yeah, we got the slot to play on the kind of Battle of the Bands, festival, in a town that was, I think, 40 miles from the town I lived in, and it was our second gig. It was my second gig in my entire life. So we were so stoked and so nervous. We packed the gear inside the car and we started drinking. And our drummer was driving. So we drank, I think, two or three bottles of red wine. We got
Oh
there,
no.
we missed the sound check. And we had, I think, between 2 or 3 hours, we needed to wait until we could get on stage and play our three songs or something. So we said, yeah, we have 2 or 3 hours, just let us drink some beers or something. And I think I was 5 beers or six or seven or something. We were wasted, completely wasted. And the guy was coming to us, hey, you need to go on stage, you need to play. So, oh yeah, oh no. I can't remember the gig, maybe just the parts of it, but a good friend of mine, a couple of months ago, he found the footage, and
Oh.
I saw it. This was 1999 or 1998, something like that. And yeah, it was we played a gig. It was really huge, and we were so young and naive and drunk and wasted. But yeah,
Yeah, that's
it
always a
was.
bad idea.
Yeah.
To get drunk before the show,
Yeah.
especially for drummers.
Yeah, that's
Yeah,
never.
he was the only one sober because he was driving, so.
Ah, that's okay. So then it's not too bad.
So we kind of had a good rhythm section, sober
All
rhythm section, yeah.
right, drummer comes in for
Yeah, yeah.
the save. Nice. Absolutely.
Yes.
So it, for each one of you, if you could play any festival in the world, which festival would you like to play and why?
Oh, that's a tough question.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of always thought about Roskilde Festival in Sweden, I think. Because watching on MTV all the festivals back in the 90s, I found Roskilde really, really great. So I don't know if they're still playing today at Roskilde, but I saw a lot of bands there, and the vibe was, amazing. And it kind of stuck in my head. So Roskilde Festival is a killer. So
Okay.
that would be great. Yeah.
I think for me it's a Brazil, like Rock in Rio,
Oh,
these huge festivals,
yeah.
and I saw like footage that is crazy there. The audience, especially in South America, is amazing. There's a lot of metalheads there.
Yeah, see, I didn't realize that until I started talking to other bands on this podcast that, have toured down there, and they're like, dude, they don't even have to know you. If they know that there's a show, it packs out
Yeah.
every damn single time. It's not like the States where you got to have some type of big ticket puller to even get people in there. It's just like we could show up to some little hole in the wall bar in the middle of South America and it's packed in like sardines from front to back. You have no idea how many metalheads are there. And I'm just like, I'd like you, I started looking up footage of that Rock in Rio and I'm like, holy crap. I thought our festivals were big, but good God.
I know a band from Munich who played in Mexico and South America, and they came back and they said it's amazing, it's unbelievable. So I think I think one of the best shows I have played were in Turkey. So Turkey is a great place to the audience is very passionate about metal. We even played like before Slayer on a festival there, and I like this kind of crowd with so much passion. So the passion can go in all directions, of course, but it's very intense.
Right. So that leads into a bonus question for me before I let CB take over. What is your local music scene like, and is it very difficult to get shows?
No, it's not. Yeah, it's always difficult to get shows, of course, because it needs time. You have to take care of it. But the local scene in Munich is great. Munich has always been a rock city. I don't know if you know bands like the Freaky Fucking Weirdos in the 90s, because they were successful in America too. So we always had great bands here, and we have a excellent venue. It's called the Backstage, and the Backstage is like it has like three different venues in one thing, and a beer garden where people can drink and talk. So everything is very, it's very rock and roll, and I think the Backstage is one of the reason why the music scene has always been good in Munich. And they're always fighting against authorities that want to close down the Backstage. And once again, I heard things like they have to pay millions to stay there
Ooh.
because they want to build something else. So it's always a fight, but the Backstage always won the fight. And we have an excellent music scene here with excellent bands.
Okay,
Yeah.
awesome.
Yeah,
All
they're
right.
still, I think they're fighting this fight last 20 years or something.
Yeah,
Ooh.
they changed the
Just to stay
place.
there.
And
Well,
it's the fourth place where they are now. They always had to go and they build up again and again. So it's really, really cool that the team is fighting for rock music, for rock culture in our city. Because without them, there's nothing left, I think. There's the big venues, of course.
right.
The huge venues where Metallica is playing.
Right.
But yeah, that's it. The
Yep.
stadiums.
All right, CB.
All right. So, if you guys could offer advice to new musicians or people looking to get into music, what advice would you give them?
That's a good one. I think it's pretty simple. Just be honest about everything and don't lie to yourself or to others through your music. Just be honest to yourself and practice all day, every day, if you have time. Yeah.
And
Hope it's
don't
simple.
try to be someone, be yourself. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. That's and unfortunately, I hear a lot of bands do the same thing as, we talk to them and they're always like, well, I want to be like Slipknot. I want to be like Metallica. And it's like, well, if you have that mentality, when you go in to write and record, you're going to end up sounding just like them. and that's not really going to do you any good. There's already a Metallica. There's already a Slipknot.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. You know, come out with something new. You know, use them as influence, but don't try to sound just like them or be just like them. Like, be yourself.
Right. You can't invent rock music, but you can have your own interpretation of your kind of rock music. So,
right.
So this is only possible if you don't copy. Yeah.
Correct. So if you guys could change one thing about the music industry that you think would make it better, what is that one thing that you would change?
Oh, Slam, what would you change?
Everything. Only one thing.
Only one thing is very difficult.
Give us a couple of examples.
Oh, it's a tough one. I mean,
first of all, go on.
No, go on.
First of all, musicians should run record label and not businessmen. This is the first thing, because it's about music and not always. Of course, I know everything in the world is about money, of course. And if you have a female singer with big boobs, you will sell better than if it's an old man without any boobs. Yeah. I think
or it's an old man with boobs.
That's a whole nother genre.
An old man with boobs would sell better than an old man without any boobs, because the boobs are special, you know.
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of funny when it comes to booking bands. I always tell my boss Kaylin, I'm like, look, they don't talk to me because I don't have tits. So you're going to have to get all of them, because they answer you. They won't answer me because I'm not pretty and I don't have titties. I'm this old dude with a big ass beard and they don't want to talk to me. They want to talk to the pretty girls.
Yeah. So this whole music shouldn't be about money. It's great if you don't have to work and you can make music. I'm the first one who's saying right. That's cool. But it shouldn't be the main target. It has always been like this. Look at all the stories. There's movies about Milli Vanilli and what they did and what the record labels and the producers did. So this has nothing to do with the music. The artists, they always dream about being a star. And I think this dream, the music business knows that they will do everything to become famous. So, and this is too much power they have over the artist. I think if there wouldn't be these businessmen, if it would be about music, we would have way better bands nowadays.
Right. I've been preaching this for the longest time, and you do need to have people in there other than just what's going to make money. Now, I granted the music's got to be good, and it should be good, because if it's trash, you know, nobody's going to listen to it. But there's got to be a point where it's not just all about the look of the band and just throw them out there. And then you also got these guys that are making these bands. They hype you up and they make you feel special and you get super excited about signing a record deal, but they don't read the fine print. And then they turn them into basically circus monkeys, and you're going to die on that stage because you're never going to make enough to pay the bills. If you're not constantly on that road 24/7, you're going to die on the road.
Exactly.
Like, there is no retirement. Like, you don't get health insurance, you don't get benefits, you don't get any of that.
They don't care about you. They just care about the sales.
Correct.
And that's too much business. So this is the main thing I will change. But this is completely naive, because this is how the world is working, and this will never change.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. How you feel, Slavin?
I'm with Patrick and you guys. I mean, it's a tough and very, very dirty business, I think. And also, as you said, you know, you just kind of you put your signature on it, and you're kind of lost, you know, if you're gonna die on a rope and just I don't know. It's tough. And I mean, I think, I don't know, it was also in the 50s and 60s and Elvis Presley and everything. I mean, it's the same but different. It's all about making money. And don't get me wrong, I'm not against they making money. So everybody needs to get some money if he's working for something. But I think they made a lot of money. A lot of money, and they didn't spend anything to just I don't know what was the sales of the CDs. I mean, Patrick, you know this better. If you sold a CD for about 14, 15 euros, what's the percentage the artist gets in the
One
end?
dollar. One dollar.
Oh,
So
right.
I think if the artist could get maybe $3, the things would have been
It
much
depends on the
better.
deal. If you're a well-known artist, of course you get $3. But
But do
the
you know
problem
what I mean?
is, it's not enough. The problem are the record deals, especially back in the days, how you said when they signed them, and if the label says you go on stage with a penis on your head, you had to do it because you are they own you. And I think many artists have got depressions and everything because they thought, I'm gonna sign a deal, I'm gonna be a rock star. And they have just been a little puppet of
Right.
some greedy
You're
guys.
gonna be exactly what they tell you to be.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's
Yep.
not you. It's what
Right.
they want you to be.
Yeah, I thought it was crazy because I remember watching an interview way back about they were talking to one of the guys from Slipknot, and they were asking them about album sales and how much money they were making. And I think they said that they were only making for the band. Now, granted, there's nine members in the band. They were only making about 10 cents per album after the record label and everybody else was taking their cut, their piece of the pie. So essentially, every member was only getting like 1.2 cents per every single album sold. And that was all they were getting. And it's like, holy shit. Like, you guys put all this time, money, blood, sweat, and tears into what you do. And everybody else is making more money off of your product than you are.
Of
Yeah,
course,
exactly. Yeah.
everybody else, yeah.
And that, to me, that is just absolute insanity. Like, I can't, I could never stomach that part of the music industry. I'm just like, I would rather just stay independent and take all the money for myself and not have anybody involved. Right.
I think the being a musician, so the whole music thing is like life. So you have nothing or everything, and there's not a lot between. So if you're not famous, you have nothing, you invest money. You buy
Right.
guitars, you guys buy stuff, you have to pay your sound engineer and everything, you have to pay the van. And of course you get some money, but most of the time you pay more, you invest more than you get, or you're huge like Metallica or Prince or Michael Jackson, and then of course you have a lot of money. But so it's a little bit like that in the real life too. You got these billionaires and all others that are working for the billionaires. So it's very similar in the music industry. I know bands, they're touring for 20 years, yeah, and they get a little bit of money, yeah, okay, but it's not a lot of money.
Right.
No, everybody gets shocked when they see some of these rock stars and they're living in like modest houses, like just the same as you. And really, by the time it boils down, they're making about the same as you are at your regular day job. And people are like, oh God dang, you're not driving a new Mercedes or a new Lexus and you don't have the big mansion. It's like, bro, no. The record execs, they got the mansion and the Mercedes. I'm still
Exactly.
sitting here driving a Honda and living in a regular neighborhood with regular people.
Yeah, you're small or you're huge, and there's nothing between.
Right. All right, CB.
All right, so I'm going to switch it up a little bit. What are your guys' hobbies outside of music?
God, what? Hobby? What's
Music.
that?
I do not have any hobbies
Is
besides
there
making
something that
music
you
and
collect or something you like to do?
Guitars. I love guitars, but that's music again.
And I collect vinyl, you know, this is a new passion I found. I have an old record player and old speakers from the 70s and old Marshall amp, Marantz amp from the also from the 70s. So yeah, maybe that's my hobby. But other than this, no.
Just electronic cigarettes maybe. Have been my hobby, but now it's my business. So.
Oh, okay. I run an
e-cigarette company.
Oh, okay. This is,
we developed this one. Yeah. So it was my hobby, but now it's my business. So yeah.
Oh God, you're gonna have CB hitting you up.
I've been doing the disposables for a while now, and I went into a mod, and I found that it was just unless you're willing to invest time into the mod. It's a lot of time, and if you don't do it right, it doesn't smoke right, and it all follows through with that.
Yeah, I use RTAs, you know, like where you make your own coil.
Okay.
So these things.
Okay.
All right, fair enough.
We just got these little disposable vapes here.
I'm not a big fan of disposables because it's very bad for the environment. There's a battery inside, there's electronics inside, there's plastic inside. So I think plastic is okay if you use it, but plastic is not okay if you throw it away. But
true. So, yeah, I get that.
So something we always do on each and every show is we actually show a music video from each band at the end. So before we get into showing your guys' music video, we've got the video for Zero. So if you want to tell us a little bit on what that song is about and what went into the creation of the video itself.
It's a question I'm not sure I can really answer because when I write something, there's not always a topic I write about. It's just kind of collecting words or reflecting on a days I had or something that happened, but it's not a particular thing. It's nothing I can describe. So I kind of, it's like those, you know, in a psychology, when you take a piece of paper and just write down the first thing that hits you. So this is the kind of way I write music. So, and I also like, and I also, I'm the same way when I listen to music, and I'm reading the song, it's always something I will find in the lyrics that affects me and my personal, you know, life or something. And then the Patrick or someone else thinks completely different. He found something completely different, something that makes sense to him. So to describe a song, I'm happy to see, I saw a couple of reviews also where the guys, really putting a work and into kind of deciphering my lyrics, and I was like, "Whoa, dude, really? Okay, I didn't know that he thought of this." But so there is no, I mean, the only thing I could say about Zero is kind of you know, just a reset, just to end everything and start new, kind of you know, okay. It's like when you fed up with everything, and we need a reset button. Just to start new. So I think for me, this is what Zero means to me. I mean, and for you, maybe something else. So and that's a good thing about music, you know, about music itself. You need to find your meaning within, you know, each lyric or each text you read. So
okay.
And about the video, I'm gonna let the Patrick talk about it.
Oh yeah, the video. I just had the idea why I would like to make a video with a bat sheet, like where you just see the silhouettes. And yeah, then the bat sheet was very crumpled, I don't know. And then I thought, oh, that's even better. So you mainly see this, people are singing in this video. So you don't, and the band, you see more the silhouettes of the band. It was a fourth video, and all the other three videos you saw the band. So I thought, yeah, why not make a video where you see the silhouettes of the band, where everything's a little bit. Our videos are always very dark, very black, and this one is white. So it was just, let's try something else.
All right, fair enough. So on that, we are going to get into their music video for Zero. Please make sure to go check out Antirope on all of their social media accounts. There's fucking 50,000 of them. I can't keep up with how many damn social media accounts there are these days because there's a million of them, and it seems like there's a new one comes out every 6 months. So go check them out. If you happen to be over in Germany and see them touring, go jump on a show, pay the price, get some merch, buy the t-shirts, help these guys out. On that, we love you guys. Here's Zero. We will see you later tonight at 9 o'clock.
We got...
Eyes blind and one ear. So what would you do? You just go there. Do you want to sleep? Yeah, I dream it.